5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
Two games, six goals, just one conceded. The only issue is that one conceded goal was down to an almighty error from David De Gea. Seven errors leading to goals since the start of last season now for De Gea. That is joint with Jordan Pickford right at the top of the charts. We're going to be getting into that on this, the Manchester United Fan Show. We're going to be reflecting on all the action at Goodison Park today. We're going to be, of course, recalling a great win over Club Brugge in the Europa League earlier on in the week. Of course, Fred with a brace, Odion Ighalo with his first goal for the club. United facing LASK. Who are they? An Austrian side, apparently. Let's not be disrespectful, but I'll be brutally honest, I'd never heard of them before. So maybe United might be able to advance further in that competition. We'll be looking ahead to the FA Cup fifth round tie with Derby this week, and of course the Manchester Derby at the weekend too. It's me, Matt Beadle. It is the Manchester United Fan Show. We're with you through to 9 p.m. and as ever, the delightful Ben Senior is here with me.
Ah, evening, mate. How are we?
Good, thank you, mate. How are you?
Yeah, I'm well, thank you.
Now, let's get on to the game with Everton first. We'll reflect on Club Brugge a bit later, but Everton, a point gained, a point or 2 points dropped?
Definitely 2 points dropped. It's disappointing. It seems to be a little bit like deja vu this season. After yesterday, I thought Chelsea slipping up to Bournemouth, that fourth spot, we could have got closer to it, could have got within a point of it, and we've messed it up again. De Gea, after 3 minutes, David De Gea, oh, he's let us down again this season. It's sad to see, but yeah, I'm disappointed with today's result, definitely.
So we'll get into the nitty-gritty of the error itself. I'm going to quickly read out some of what Roy Keane and Graeme Souness were saying in the Sky Sports studio at the time. And when asked Roy Keane what you'd say to him in the dressing room at halftime, or what you'd even do to David De Gea, he said you'd kill him. All right, Roy, calm down. Yeah. He said it's crazy. You talk about being clever. He said he takes too long. What is he waiting for? It's almost a bit of arrogance to it. I'd have lynched him at halftime. This is an experienced international goalkeeper. It's madness, he said.
I mean, you wonder why Roy Keane's not had an illustrious managerial career when he's saying stuff like that. But
good man management, eh?
He was almost frothing at the mouth when he's saying it on TV. But, I mean, I won't go down that line and say he needs to be lynched or anything like that. I think that's a bit far, Roy. But, yeah, it was a bit sad to see, because actually I thought up until the third minute we'd actually started the game with the right intent. We seemed to have the right intensity. Bruno Fernandes was getting on the ball a little bit. We were passing it around midfield. We seemed to be in Everton's half. And then, I don't know, he just seemed to think he had all the time in the world, and we had options. There was players all around him. He could have hit it long, could have put it anywhere, but he had to stick it against Calvert-Lewin's thigh and into the back of the net, didn't he?
I think this is down partly to the problem, isn't it, that we need to play out from the back at all costs now. And incidentally, he actually tried to go long. And I think he just switched off. There is this desire now, this necessity that we must play out from the back. And we saw with the equaliser from Bruno, which we'll get onto in a minute, that it stemmed from Everton playing out from the back. Now, I don't care what you say, the statistics, I'd love to see them now with regards to how many goals are scored as a result of teams playing out from the back. Now, just launch it. And Graham Souness said that. He said, just launch it, David De Gea. It's early on in the game. You want to get the ball as far away from your box as possible. If it means giving up possession, so be it. He did eventually try to launch it, but it took too long. And what I would say is that he bounced back instantly. I know that it's seven errors leading to goals now. I know the claws are going to be out for David De Gea because of the contract that he signed, because he's on so much money at Manchester United now, and because he's not been as good as we've known him to be in the past 4 or 5 years or so. But he bounced back instantly and made a great save from Calvert-Lewin moments later.
Yeah, he has got that in his locker, and that's what you expect of De Gea. I know, especially on TV, Roy Keane was a bit critical even then and saying, well, he's just doing his job by saving them sort of shots. And he is, but that is only because we've been accustomed to David De Gea being up there with the best keepers in the world and saving shots that he has no right to save. So he did have a decent game after that mistake, and he did pick himself up and he looked good coming for crosses and stuff, where as in the past his head would go down and his confidence would go. It didn't today, but it's just these mistakes just creeping into his game that we're just not really used to with David De Gea as a whole at Man United. So it's a bit disappointing, especially with the defence he had in front of him today. I thought we did okay defensively, and I just thought it was just that, like you said, just a lack of concentration. I don't think it was the fact that he was trying to play out for the back or lump it. I don't really think that matters. It was just literally a lapse in concentration.
You said there that you thought United started with the right intent, the right purpose. I have to say, I think even when the goal went in, they continued that. I thought for the first half, United, I want to say dictated proceedings, but certainly looked the better team and played the ball around nicely. And, you know, I get a lot of stick for being a United fan and people going, oh, God, you're absolutely rubbish. And you compare back to former years. When you think of those times under Louis van Gaal and Jose Mourinho to a certain extent too, I can't remember United really playing like that as creatively as they were today. And yes, not creating as many clear-cut chances, and that, I suppose, is part of the problem. But when you look at that midfield diamond to an extent that he brought in as well, you had Bruno in there, you had Nemanja Matic, who has come back to a pretty decent run of form at the moment, Scott McTominay and Fred. And I know that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer came out and said, you know what, maybe that surprised Everton a little bit that I went with that formation. But United playing that sort of diamond, I thought the midfield were pretty good today, especially in that first half. And Scott McTominay, I know we've spoken about him many times and his authority in this United side and the fact that we missed him when he was out. He shows that he is a leader. He's a young lad, but he's a leader. He's so vocal on that pitch.
And let's not forget, we got battered there last season at Goodison Park. Mm. So, yeah, I think like you said, we didn't let the goal affect us too much in terms of the team performance. And it was interesting to the diamond and see him put Bruno Fernandes up front as well as alongside or in behind Martial and Greenwood. And it was a bit of a funny formation, you think, when we were lined up, and not one that we're really used to playing this season. But it seemed to work. Bruno was getting on the ball quite a lot. Luke Shaw was bombing down the left. The final product could have been a little bit better at times. I thought Martial was a little bit off the pace. I don't know whether that's because he's had slight niggly injuries or whether missing midweek had an effect on that. So I thought he looked slightly off the pace. But yeah, the intent was actually there from the start. And then first, it was almost a similar trend almost to midweek, in the fact that first half we were actually really good, and then second half it just dropped off a cliff.
It did fizzle out, didn't it? And it's games like this, I have to say, that drive certain sections of United support mad with Anthony Martial. I've always been a huge supporter of his, but he actually looked rather disinterested. And he had that face, that Martial face that we've become so accustomed to, where you think a smile is so far beyond your emotions right now. And there were a couple of occasions when he had the ball in decent positions and just tried to shift and a shot that was blocked or deflected over. And you think, that's not good enough. You need to be impacting the game more than that. One man who did, of course, impact the game incredibly so was Bruno Fernandes. That's three on the bounce from him. Here is what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer had to say after the game with his delight on Bruno's performance.
It was a good goal. First time passed by Nemanja in our press. Of course, there's a missed pass by them, but Bruno's striking the ball from outside the box. The goal was good. I think he's always trying to create something, score goals or create chances. So sometimes he misses, sometimes he scores.
Sometimes he misses, sometimes he scores. Pretty decent analysis there from Ollie, but good to see him on the score sheet. Yes, it was an error from Jordan Pickford. He should have saved it. But to have a midfielder that is willing to have a pop and actually get the ball on target with a bit of power, with a bit of pace as well, is what you want to see.
Yeah, and an actual goal threat as well. That's what we've been missing from midfield all season, really. And yeah, okay, Pickford probably should have done a little bit better, but you've got to have the shot to even have the chance. And that makes it, what, 3 goals, 2 assists in his first few games for United, which is ridiculous, really, the impact that he's had. When he came into the club, I know we got a bit excited on here, and a lot of fans got a bit excited because you see his numbers for Sporting and you think, oh my God, have we got a world-class player here? But then there's the caveat that he's not used to playing Premier League football, he's got to adapt. But he seems to have come to this United side and automatically he's our best player. Everyone's looking from on the ball, and that's the key, the difference, where whoever picks it up, whether it's Maguire, Shaw in defence, he's the first one they look for, and he's coming deep. Even though he played as sort of far forward as we've seen him in a United shirt today, he actually came deeper a lot of the time and brought the ball up, and was acted as that sort of link between midfield and attack. And I thought he was really impressive today.
He was, and it was a point, and it could have potentially been less, of course, right at the end of the game with the goal that was ruled out through VAR. Gylfi Sigurdsson sprawled across the 6-yard box. I don't care what anybody says. I don't care whether David De Gea wouldn't have got to the deflected shot. There's no way in God's green earth that you can give that as a goal when an opposition player is in front of the goalkeeper in the 6-yard box. It's not even an argument for me. And there was a clip, a great clip on Sky after the game of Dominic Calvert-Lewin. He was shown by the Sky Sports media team. Listen, here it is. And he was beside himself. He was like, he's not even interfering. That's an absolute joke of a decision. I can't believe that's not been given. I mean, come on. Surely there's no way you can give a goal when a player is sprawled in the 6-yard box in front of a goalkeeper.
Yeah, so Varchester United was trending on Twitter
before.
Oh, do
me a fact. Is that from Liverpool fans? Desperate,
exactly.
Desperate to get that monkey off their back.
I'm having none of that. There was a moment when Maguire deflected off Maguire and he thought, oh no, and he saw Sigurdsson and instantly thought, yeah, thank God we've got a lifeline. And I think that was all United fans watching that thinking, oh please, please make the correct decision in the end, really, let's be honest. Because, I mean, what was he doing, Sigurdsson? I have no idea, because Everton were attacking and he was attacking as well, and they were attacking on David De Gea's goal, and he just sort of sat down there and just, well, he could have had a cup of tea. He was there for about 10, 15 seconds before the ball actually got near him. So I think Everton can't really complain too much. If you're going to have a player that just wants to sit on David De Gea's goal line, then surely he's got to give an offside for that.
I'd have to say, I don't like the fact that it does give you a lifeline that Harry Maguire suddenly thought, oh, I can get out of this. Surely the linesman should just give that and that's that. I don't think we particularly need VAR for those kinds of decisions. And Carlo Ancelotti, we saw him furious after the game, the first ever manager to be sent off in the Premier League. And it was brilliant, I thought, in terms of the fact that he stood, didn't he? He just kind of stood in front of the referee, Chris Kavanagh, and basically was trying to give him an explanation. And sometimes referees always look a bit, I'd kind of go a bit introverted, didn't they? They don't really know what to do. But he gave him the red card, he walked off, and then had a camera thrust in his face as he's walking off the pitch. But all in all, Ben, after the midweek's game, which we'll get onto in a moment or two, still a decent performance, I think, from United, and an improvement in a performance from what we've seen earlier on in the season.
Yeah, definitely. And you look at this team and you think the likes of Harry Maguire, I thought he was, apart from that last sort of 10 seconds of madness, he was an absolute rock today. And that game was one that we lost last season, but could have easily been one that we lost this season if we hadn't have had him in that defence, because I think he was an absolute rock at the back. And I think Bruno was that sort of creative spark we needed in midfield. Good to see McTominay back. Matic, like I said, back in form. Just a little bit missing from the likes of Martial. And I must say Greenwood, although I think we've got to accept that as part of his development as a young prospect for this club. So yeah, it wasn't a bad performance. I thought first half was good. Second half, we just didn't come out.
No, and you're right about Mason Greenwood as well. I think that's the fear when you introduce these young players to suddenly expect them to be the saviour of the club. And Ollie actually said that about Bruno, didn't he? He said, listen, we all need to calm down and not expect him to suddenly turn our fortunes around. He's doing his best, though. 3 goals in 3 games for Manchester United. We're going to be discussing that a bit more in a moment. We're going to be talking more. David De Gea. We'll have Jay from Full Time Devils joining us too.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
For the fans, by the fans. Love Sport Radio.
Manchester United fan show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, and Ben Senior with you through to 9 p.m. this evening. Just reacting to the 1-0 draw with Everton today. We'll also get on to that 5-0 trouncing of Club Brugge earlier on in the week too. And we'll be looking ahead to FA Cup games with Derby and the big Manchester Derby at the weekend too. But Ben, let's get on to David De Gea again and that error. Because interestingly, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was asked after the game about the error, as you would expect. And he basically said, we want the best possible squad for Manchester United. He was then referring to Dean Henderson, who he was asked about. And he said, he's doing well, that's fine. The day he comes back, obviously he's fighting. But he did say, quite crucially here, that David is still the best goalkeeper in the world. I think that's key. Maybe just doing it for David De Gea's ego, but the fact that Solskjaer has come out and instantly defended his goalkeeper is quite crucial.
Yeah, I think he's got to defend him after today's mistake. I think Ole has this slight tendency to sort of overcredit people a little bit in terms of, like, I'm not sure whether De Gea is currently the best keeper in the world on his current form this season and last season especially, but if that makes him get his confidence back and play better, then I'm all for it. And I think, yeah, Henderson's had a brilliant season. I think it's not just United. He's been called up for England and people are calling for him to be the number one at the Euro. So I think there's a lot of focus on him. And I think I would like to see him be brought back to the club for next season, because you look at Romero and, look, Romero is probably one of the best second keepers in the league and probably in world football as well. Whenever he comes in for the cup matches, he never really makes mistakes and he always delivers. But is he really putting that pressure on De Gea for a first team space? You've got to say he's not. He's not, because when it's a choice of De Gea or Romero, it's De Gea every time unless it's in the cup. So I would like to see Henderson come back, and I think, but if he did come back, I think he'd only come back if he was given assurances that he's challenging for that first team spot and that first goalkeeper spot for United.
Depending on how you read into this, and we spoke about this a lot on the final whistle earlier on with regards to certain clubs and certain media teams within certain clubs, especially social media managers who seem to be a law unto themselves and just tweet whatever they want and put it out into the world without probably getting any kind of proof, any kind of confirmation from a media manager that we used to have at football clubs before social media existed. We saw the nonsense that Leeds put out yesterday after their win over Hull. Completely ridiculous. We saw Arsenal on the flip side putting out few after Liverpool's run, 44 game unbeaten run, was ended against Watford. They did not make it 19, of course. That was quite funny. Sheffield United, around 5 hours ago or so now, so shortly after David De Gea had made that error, just tweeted a picture of Dean Henderson with the caption, Dino.
Oh, they're sneaky ones, aren't they?
It's funny, isn't it? Instantly, it's like these media managers are waiting to put something out there. But clearly, there's a motive behind this. Clearly, Sheffield United, and we have the Sheffield United fan show coming up after this, of course. So we'll speak to James Shield of the Sheffield Express and Star about that particular incident. They're desperate to keep hold of him. I do think now that it's difficult, isn't it, with regards to the goalkeeper situation, because where would David De Gea go? It's very difficult. Where would Jan Oblak go, for example? Liverpool not getting rid of Alisson. Man City not getting rid of Edison. You've got Thibaut Courtois in at Real Madrid. Maybe he might move on now. Juventus may be looking for a goalkeeper. But if David De Gea wants to leave Manchester United, his options, I'd say, are probably quite limited, which then means getting Dean Henderson into this side is even more difficult.
Yeah, it is a difficult sort of equation to try and work out with both of them, but they are. David De Gea is still a top bracket goalkeeper. When you're looking at the best keepers in the world, like someone that you mentioned there, the likes of Oblak, Alisson, Courtois still, De Gea is still in that top bracket, and if you're going to try and replace De Gea and go for one of them, it won't be a massive upgrade, let's be honest. But Dean Henderson is a keeper that has a lot of promise. And if it was the case that he went on loan, I know he's been on loan for two seasons now at Sheffield United, and I just think United would be stupid to let him go for a fee and not have some sort of clause to be able to bring him back, because I think that's the key. I think you look long term, and I think De Gea is the keeper for now and possibly next season as well, but I think longer term than that, I think Dean Henderson, you've got to be bringing him to that United side.
Yeah, it remains to be seen what United decide to do with that goalkeeping scenario. Like we said, De Gea now 7 errors leading to goals since the start of last season, along with Jordan Pickford, Bernd Leno and Martin Dubravka too. Roy Keane wasn't having any of that, by the way. He also said with regards to Jordan Pickford, didn't he? I'm not having the stats. He's not up to it. He's not good enough. So it'll be interesting as well to see what Roy Keane had to say about the great save that Jordan Pickford made from Odi and Ighalo right at the end of the game, which could have stolen the points for Manchester United. Ighalo nearly with his second goal for the club, because of course he scored his first goal for the club in that 5-0 win over Club Brugge earlier on in the week. You love to see it, Ben. Odi and Ighalo, a Manchester United goal scorer, and put in a pretty decent performance too.
Ah, finally got that goal. Seems like, I don't know why, it seems like we've been waiting an age for him to finally get it. He's had a couple of chances. Remember that chance he had against Chelsea? And it's just, you just wanted him to score that goal, and I was so pleased to see him get it. Whether or not his United career goes to massive heights or not is yet to be seen, but yeah, it was nice to see him get that goal. And the whole performance the first half was, I mean, we had absolutely everything, didn't we? We had a masterclass from Bruno Fernandes in how to run a game. We had Juan Mata linking up with him very nicely and just providing that extra bit of quality that we've missed this season, and that sort of shared understanding that, you know, these are two players that have that creative spark in midfield, and possibly that's what we might have missed today a little bit, the fact that we had players on the same wavelength as Mata and Fernandes, and the Club Brugge defender with the greatest save I've seen in quite a while, actually. Oh, that was just absolute comedy, wasn't it? The fact that the shot was probably being saved anyway by Simon Mignolet in net, and then he just reached out an arm, and God knows what was going through his head, because worst comes to worst, you concede a goal and you get on with the game. But yeah, the penalty taker Bruno Fernandes stepped up, and with that little hop, skip and a jump that he did, it's in the net again.
Certainly is a good penalty, isn't it? You wouldn't want to see one of those saved, because then suddenly he looks a bit stupid. But in terms of everything going United's way in that game, it reminded me of the first show, I think, that we did together, Ben, after United beat Chelsea on the opening day of the season. Rashford scoring, Martial scoring, new signing Daniel James scoring. On this occasion, we get Odi Ighalo with his first goal for the club. We see Bruno Fernandes scoring in Europe for the club. We see Scott McTominay returning to the team and scoring himself, and we see Fred, a player that everybody's desperate to do well for the club, bagging a brace. In terms of what you'd want from a United performance in Europe in midweek, a potentially tricky tie against a relatively decent Club Brugge side, it had everything.
Yeah, we still need to put it to bed. You know, it was all even after the first leg, and you know them sort of nights, if we don't score within the first sort of 15-20 minutes, then it gets a little bit nervy, the crowd sort of gets a little bit twitchy. So we needed that, we needed to get off to a good start, and it couldn't have gone any better. And yeah, like you say, Fred, I've been mentioning Bruno Fernandes a lot, but Fred, an absolute stormer midweek.
Yeah, a very good game indeed. Delighted to say we're now joined by Jay from Full Time Devils. Hello, Jay.
All right, lads, you okay?
Yeah, good. Thank you, mate. Thanks for joining us yet again on this fine Sunday evening Manchester United fan show. We've been reflecting on the game with Everton, of course, the game with Club Brugge 2. We'll just quickly get your opinion on Everton, on David De Gea, because much of the talk, of course, post-game is about Dean Henderson and the fact that maybe he should come back to United as the number one next season. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has instantly refuted those claims and said, no, David De Gea is still number one in the world, in my opinion. What did you make of the error today?
Well, the thing is, how many times does this happen where you say, oh, it's out of character for David De Gea? You keep saying that, and eventually it doesn't become out of character. And I don't know with David De Gea. I think if you go back to Spurs away last season at Wembley when we won 1-0, and he was absolutely amazing. He kept shot after shot out, and it gave us hope at top four. Since then, I don't think he's been the same player. And if you look at it, I used to be able to name David De Gea's mistakes on one hand. But now you look at it, last season, he made mistakes against Barcelona. He made mistakes in the derby against City. He made a mistake against Chelsea. This season, we saw him make mistakes. He made a mistake against Arsenal as well last season. This season, against Palace, against Watford, where it went through his hands. And then obviously today, he's always seems to have one in him. And the thing with David De Gea is, I don't think he commands his area very well. I don't think his distribution is that great. The thing that's always sort of set him aside is his shot stopping is outstanding. And when he starts to lose that and he starts to make these mistakes, you have to ask yourself, I'm not even looking as far ahead as Dean Henderson. I'm looking at Sergio Romero and thinking, overall, would Romero be a better option in goal? I'm not quite sure if we're there yet, but I think the distance between those two players is closer than it's ever been.
Do you really think so? Because it's interesting now with regards to what happens with David De Gea. He did sign, of course, that extended deal with a lot of money going into that lucrative deal at the club. What would you do now, Jay? Because I mentioned it earlier, you look at the potential availabilities, the openings really for top goalkeepers throughout Europe. You look at PSG, Keylor Navas, potentially maybe there he could come to the end of his career and maybe they'd bring a David De Gea in. Juve, Buffon, Chesney, I suppose. Maybe that would be an improvement. But in the Premier League, Alisson not going anywhere, Edison not going anywhere. You've got Oblak at Atletico Madrid. You've got Marc-Andre Ter Stegen, of course, doing what he's doing at Barcelona. Yes, Manuel Neuer is coming to the end of his time at Bayern Munich, but they've already signed Alexander Nubel. He's going to come in and basically act as his replacement. So in terms of where David De Gea could go in Europe, his options are limited. So would you, if you were Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, would you try and cash in on David De Gea, or would you have that faith in him to return to the form that we all once knew and loved? He doesn't know, Ben. He doesn't know what he wants to do with David De Gea. So, I mean, essentially, you've already answered that question. So we'll go back to the game with the game against Club Brugge, of course, and let's get on to Fred, because he's bagged a brace again. He's bagged a brace today. His first goals for the club in a while. He's had a very good performance, I think, today. Yet again, he is now starting to grow in confidence. He's starting to show a bit more authority in that midfield and, you know, repay the rather large transfer fee that United put out for him.
I don't know what it is that's happened, but it's done a whole 360 this season and turned into a different player completely. And now he looks like a player that we need in our midfield, and we need in that United side, because he is that sort of all-action midfield that he'll fly into every tackle. And he's one of those players that I sort of see a little bit like an Ander Herrera, where rival clubs will love to hate him, sort of thing, because he dives into every tackle. He's always up there. If there's any sort of a scuffle with anyone, he's the first one in there. And you like to see it from a United player to have that heart and have that drive to be able to go and sort of get stuck in, really, in that midfield. So it's good that he is that midfielder that can combat and break up play. But yeah, like you said, it was amazing to see him score two goals, because that doesn't really happen from a midfielder in that sort of position.
No, he's certainly producing some of the goods that maybe might make him a stalwart in that Manchester United midfield. I believe Jay is back with us. Jay, were you that offended by my question?
Outrageous question. I'm not having any of it. I hung up immediately. Apologies, yeah. No, you're asking me about David De Gea, whether I thought that he would keep his place in the side. I think you were alluding to whether he would move on anywhere. And I think, as you said, you mentioned just before I was cut off, you know, he has signed this massive deal. I think he's the highest paid goalkeeper ever, or one of the highest paid goalkeepers ever.
He's certainly up there. And my point was, Jay, I don't know whether you got the back end of it, is that options are limited, really, throughout Europe. Yes, maybe Juve is an option. Maybe PSG is an option. But goalkeepers at pretty much every other top club that David De Gea would expect to go to aren't really there. We saw a bit of a goalkeeper merry-go-round a few seasons ago. So, you know, when he had his chance to move, you know, whether it was his choice or whether it was the club's choice to keep him at Manchester United, that has now gone now. So, if given the chance, would you cash in on David De Gea and try and offload him to a PSG, to a Juventus, and bring the likes of Dean Henderson in as your number one? Or would you like to see him try and return to the form that he previously had at the club?
I mean, in an ideal world, I'd love to see him return to the form that he had, because he was the best goalkeeper I've probably ever seen on his day. He was an absolute phenomenon. He almost reinvented goalkeeping the way he used his legs and his feet. It was ridiculous. But, you know, how long can you keep carrying him? And it is the case of carrying him now. And I think if there was a deal to be made where, you know, some of those clubs you mentioned, listen, we're not going to swap David De Gea for Mbappe or anyone like that. But if there was a sort of player swap and money deal which benefited Manchester United, then I wouldn't be against that. And I wouldn't be against Dean Henderson coming back to the club as number one. He's only young. He's proven himself at Sheffield United. I was talking to someone earlier and I said the ultimate irony here is Sheffield United may end up, I know it's a massive if, but could end up in the Champions League with Dean Henderson getting him there, and we could end up out of it with David De Gea as our number one. So I wouldn't mind Dean Henderson coming in and David De Gea moving on if we could perhaps get
some sort of player swap deal. Not another goalkeeper, obviously, but, you know, it was one of those clubs you mentioned. Maybe if Juve were going to let us have Dybala, then maybe that would work.
Maybe it would. I'm not sure how Dybala would fit into this Manchester United side. We'll get into that next on the Manchester United Fan Show on Love Sport.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
Manchester United Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, Ben Senior and Jay from Full Time Devils is with us too. Now, gents, it's a big 7 days in the world of Manchester United. Of course, Derby County in the FA Cup fifth round. That's got a narrative with a certain record goal scorer coming up against his former side, a former captain of Manchester United, of course. And then on Sunday, next Sunday, Manchester United hosting Manchester City in the Manchester Derby in the Premier League. United not beating City since the 2014-15 season at Old Trafford. So we'll get into that too. But Ben, Derby up next on Thursday. So we've got a while to wait, a few more FA Cup fifth round ties before that. But Wayne Rooney, that is the big talking point here. Back against Manchester United. We thought after he left Everton and went over to the US with DC United, this would never happen again. But hey ho.
Yeah, it's a bit of a magical story in it in the cup, which is good to see. And you know what? It'd be nice to welcome Rooney back to facing the club, because I think towards the back end of his United career, he got a little bit of criticism for how his performances sort of went away a little bit, and he wasn't the player that he used to be. But since going away, I think the appreciation has come back for him, and I think you appreciate players more like that with the records that he's gone after he's played for the club than you do sometimes when he's actually there. But yeah, greatest goal scorer and one of our great players of the Premier League era. But the actual cup game itself, I think it's very important, because I think, and I've said it week in week out on this show, that imagine what a piece of silverware would do both for Solskjaer and this young United team at the minute.
It would make a huge difference. And Jay, what a story this is. Of course, 253 goals for United. That 253rd goal always sticks out for me away at Stoke, of course. The free kick, the fact that you had the sharp hoardings in the background, everything about that was beautiful. It was his final goal for the club. I mean, memories of Wayne Rooney, of course, and we're going to get into the Premier League Hall of Fame later on in the show, but listen, you want your former players to do well, but when they come up against you, you just pray that it's one of those quiet games. I remember David Beckham coming to play against Manchester United for AC Milan. Ronaldo returning, of course, in that 2012-13 season in the Champions League. Yes, he scored. Yes, it was deadly silent at Old Trafford. He didn't even celebrate. You just hope the game kind of passes by without incident, because you don't want there to be any kind of ill feeling. And with Wayne Rooney, I always worry. You know, he was always that caged beast waiting for something to come out. I just hope that it just passes smoothly.
Yeah, I mean, that's what made Wayne Rooney such a great player. I remember him coming back when he played for Everton, and United fans were singing his name, and he just didn't acknowledge us at all, even when he went off. He didn't wave, he didn't do any of that. He was focused on doing his job for Everton. And you have to respect that and admire it. And, you know, I've seen Wayne Rooney playing testimonials, playing friendly UNICEF games, and be absolutely screaming at the referee that he didn't get a penalty. That's how he is, and that's what made him such a great player. So he's obviously going to give his all for Derby County. And I fully respect that. And I hope he doesn't celebrate. I hope he doesn't score, for starters. But if he does, I hope he doesn't celebrate. But I'm not going to lose too much sleep over things like that if he does. I expect Wayne Rooney to turn up and do his all. But I think if Manchester United turn up, and if we play as well as we have been doing and as well as we can do, then we should be far too strong for any Derby County team.
You'd like to think so, of course. They've been on a relatively poor run in the Championship. Back to winning ways yesterday against Sheffield Wednesday, but that's not too difficult. Sheffield Wednesday on a torrid run in the Championship. They don't travel too well, Derby, but of course the game is at Pride Park instead, and their home form is the second best in the Championship, just behind Preston, I believe. So Philip Cocker has certainly got them going on home soil. We'll move ahead to the game, of course, with Manchester City at the weekend, Jay. And listen, the Manchester Derby, of always a big game in the Premier League. Not so much this season, I suppose, for City. The title is out of reach for them, regardless of what happened to Liverpool at the weekend. But for United's top four hopes, getting a win at Old Trafford is massive against City. Something they've not been able to do, as I said, since that 4-2 win back in April 2015.
Yeah, I mean, our record against City at home, as you've mentioned, is abysmal, and it's not acceptable that, oddly enough, at the Etihad, we've actually done okay. I think, you know, we won there a few years ago where we've been beaten 3-2, we beat them twice there this season, albeit one was in a cup game that didn't see us through. So going to the Etihad, you sort of feel a bit more confident than you would hosting them, but we should be able to beat City. I know City are a great team, and in the Carabao Cup, in the home leg, it was nearly all over and done after half an hour. They absolutely tore us apart. But I think with all the fans behind us, with what this team is capable of, we have hit a little bit of form. I think there's a lot more confidence going into games now, knowing that you've got a player like Bruno Fernandes who can unlock defences as well. So we have to go for it. We have to feel sort of go into this with a bit of confidence and a bit of swagger about us. We shouldn't be going into this thinking, oh no, it's City, we can't cope with them, what we're going to do. We've got to try and get at them. We are going to miss Marcus Rashford because he always plays well against Manchester City. And although Martial's been doing well, it's not quite the same without Rashford playing in these games. But listen, you know, this isn't a vintage Manchester City team. I know they're doing relatively well. They're in the Champions League. They've just won the Carabao Cup and they are second in the league. But this isn't the team that we've seen in previous seasons where they've absolutely been storming it away in the league. They've been beaten quite a few times. I think, is it 60 defeats in the league this season or something like that anyway? So we can beat them and we should be beating them at home. We should be going into this game feeling, you know, we are Manchester United. This is a derby. We want to show them who is the, you know, the sort of the boss of Manchester, if you want for a better expression. So I think we should go into this game confident. It's going to be difficult, but I don't see why we can't beat them because we've got the players there. We've got a fairly good defensive record of late. I read somewhere that we've got something like the second highest clean sheets in Europe. I don't know if that's still the case, but recently that was one of the statistics I saw. Not a great result against Everton, but not the worst result either. We've had good results away at Stamford Bridge. A solid result, as you mentioned earlier, in the Europa League and a good win at home to Watford. So, yeah, I think there's every reason to think we can win this one.
And he mentioned swagger there, Ben, and the fact that we need to go out to a likes of Manchester City and bring that swagger. I'm starting to see that from United now. I saw it today in the first half against Everton. I thought there was a real authority about the way that United passed the ball, about the way they played. And have we seen anything from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's reign at Manchester United, especially when coming up against those bigger clubs? You know, the performance at Liverpool earlier on in the season, yes, losing 2-0, albeit right at the end with that final goal from Mo Salah. United put in a decent performance, home and away, against Liverpool this season. So coming up against those bigger clubs, of course, beating Chelsea a few weeks ago away from home, he always seems to turn it on when we actually play teams who are, I don't want to say on our level, but slightly superior.
Yeah, I don't know what it is that Ollie seems to change in his motivation before these games, but we do seem to puff out our chest more as a team, and going against the big clubs and especially against our rivals, we do up our game than we do to the lesser team, as it were. And I think the key is how we start the game and how we approach it. Like Jay was saying there, we need to go in for it with a bit of swagger, and I think we can do now. The fact that Bruno Fernandes has been the catalyst that we can now go be a bit more creative in midfield, and we can actually go into that game and say, do you know what, we're not going to just match it man for man, and we're not going to defend with a low block for the first 15 minutes and just hope that you don't score and we'll break from there. We can actually go, actually, let's get on the ball, let's get Bruno on the ball, get players around him, get our fullbacks forward, get Martial in the game early on and actually impact them, because you saw them even in the Carabao Cup final today, defensively, you can get at City. No matter who they play in that back four, I think you can get at them. And I think even though Rashford isn't in the United side for Sunday, I think we've still got pace up front with Martial. Whether James plays or not, it'll be main to be seen, or whether he brings in Greenwood again. But yeah, especially with Bruno in there, McTominay back now, we've got a strong midfield, which means actually we can go and implement our game plan from the off.
And Jay, just to finish before we move on to the Premier League Hall of Fame chat and a bit about David Beckham too. As things stand, Manchester United is sitting pretty, if you can say pretty, in fifth spot in the Premier League, right? 3 points adrift of Chelsea in those top four spots. Still, as things stand, in the FA Cup. So in the fifth round, potentially going through to the quarterfinals of the FA Cup and now into the last 16 of the Europa League too. You know, there are two potential trophies that Manchester United can win this season. So for all the chat about how poor it's been, how bad it is under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, as things stand, you know, with 10 games to go in the Premier League season, it's not actually that bad.
No, you're right. It's not. It's weird, isn't it? Because if United had 3 more points and we were in fourth, everyone would be going, oh, this is great. We're doing really well. Yeah, the fact we've got 3 less points, people go, oh, well, we're not in the top four. He's only up to the job. Long term, should we get Poch in? All these sort of question marks around him. When Ole came in, we had that magnificent run and everyone thought, oh, we cracked it. But people forgot the mess he inherited. You know, Jose didn't get sacked because everything was wonderful. He got sacked because we were poor and there was just disarray throughout the club. And then when the wheels started coming off towards the end of last season and Ole started getting questioned, he said, you know, I need more time. I need a pre-season. And there's going to be a lot of changes. Funnily enough, after the Everton game when we lost 4-0, he said some of these players won't be here. Now, he's had a massive transition here. We've got rid of some of our main players, the main players under Jose, with the likes of Fellaini, Herrera, and Lukaku and Sanchez have all been moved on. He's brought through the youngsters, the Greenwoods, the, as you mentioned, the Brandon Williams, players like that. He's sort of become more reliant on the likes of Marcus and Anthony Martial. He's made a lot of changes and he's brought in some new signings. So I think he's doing a good job, and I've said this all season. I think you judge him at the end of the season. And right now, if someone had said to me, beginning of the season, you're going to be 3 points off fourth, you're going to still be in the FA Cup, you're going to still be in with a chance of Europa come the end of February, beginning of March, would you be happy with that? I think that, yeah, I'd be okay with that. I'm fairly happy. At the end of the season, if we're in the Champions League, I think Ollie's done his job. Now, if that qualifying for the Champions League is by the Europa League, by winning that, or finishing top four, I think he's done a good job considering the amount of changes he's made and he's had to make. But if we can win a trophy and qualify as well, if we go and win the FA Cup, then I think that's outstanding. But there's a long way to go yet. We know that some big teams still in the FA Cup, so we'll have to see in that one. Even the Europa, you know, even look at someone like Wolves who are still in it, and they're having a great season as well. So it's not going to be easy, and it's certainly not going to be easy to get into the top four, but it's all doable. And as we've been talking about, United have started to look a little bit better recently. We've started to have a bit more belief. And you're going into these games, and I think a lot of it is to do with Bruno, thinking, you know what, we've got a chance here. And perhaps that was missing. And considering the fact we've missed Paul Pogba for practically all the season, I think, in answer to the original question, I think Ollie deserves a lot of credit.
He does indeed. 10 games to go in the Premier League for Manchester United, an FA Cup fifth round clash with Derby on Thursday, and then the Manchester Derby next weekend. It is the Manchester United Fan Show. Next, we're going to be moving our attentions to a certain lad named Bex.
Love Sport Radio, the station giving fans a voice.
It's the Manchester United Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, Ben Senior and Jay from Full Time Devils joining us too. Now, gents, it's that time of the show where we reflect. We go a bit nostalgic and we look at past players, former players, of course, David Beckham being one of those. And this is due to the news that the Premier League have announced that there is to be a Hall of Fame. Now, the first inductees will be announced mid-March. So you'd imagine it's going to be Alan Shearer plus one other. Then there's going to be a whole load of names thrown out to fans, nominations that they can then vote on. And as you said, Ben, in the break there, that could get a bit nasty, a bit crazy. You never know what's going to happen in that scenario. But a certain someone, David Beckham, of course, who has infiltrated MLS, into Miami playing their first game against LAFC today. So can't wait to see what happens with that one. He was the subject of the latest episode of Barkley and Barton here on Love Sport, an exclusive series that looks at a post-war history of Manchester United. And Paddy Barkley, who also hosts a show here with Ian Stone on a Friday, so make sure you tune into that between 12 and 3 p.m, actually did boast the fact that he believes he was the first person to discover Bex.
Tell you how it started. It was around the time of the class of 92. I happened to be covering a match at Luton. Luton, it might have been against United. Yes, it was. It was against United. United had won comfortably and given Luton quite a spanking. And at the after-match press conference, David Pleat was ruing that his team had been so comprehensively outplayed. And he said, oh, no, but it's worse than that. He says that Manchester United, all the reports I'm getting is that their youth team is so good that it's going to rule English football for the next 10 years. I couldn't get this out of my head, you know, because I thought this is like the Busby Babes all over again. And I was due to go to, I think it was a derby match at Main Road soon afterwards. And I found out that the youth team was playing at the Cliff against Morecambe on the Saturday morning. So I thought, this is brilliant. I'm going to drive up earlier and I'm going to watch this fantastic youth team before I go to Main Road for the derby match. So I drove up, went to the Cliff. It was easy to get in, you know, the door was open. Drove over to a car park that was overlooking the pitch. Got out of the car and started watching this game. I still remember a little ginger guy called Scholes playing sort of number 10 off a centre-forward who was, I think, Richard Irving. And there was Keith Gillespie playing on the right wing, and on the left wing, Ben Thornley. John O'Kane was right back. I think Phil Neville was younger, a year younger than the others, but I think he was at left back. Chris Casper and Gary Neville were the central defenders. I think Kevin Pilkington might have been in goal. I'm not sure if Robbie Savage was playing. No, he can't have been, because the midfield two were a lad called Beckham. I didn't know he was called Beckham, but a skinny guy with floppy hair and a more digger-type player, who I later recognised as Nicky Butt. Anyway, Scholes was obviously magical. So, and because he was ginger hair, he was eye-catching. But I couldn't take my eyes off Beckham, the number eight. He was different from any English player. Soft feet, lovely way of playing, beautiful passer, sort of right central midfielder. I just couldn't contain myself. And there was only one other person watching the game. And it was a guy in a big Rover car, old-fashioned Rover car, the ones which had the wheel on the back, you know, in a case. And he was sort of lolling, sitting, leaning on his car, watching the game. And I went over to him. I said, not bad game, is it? Because the football they were playing was fantastic. The bloke said, yeah, they're doing all right today. I said, that number eight, he's going to play 50 times for England. And the bloke turned to me and said, well, I hope so, because he's my son. It was Ted Beckham. And the reason he had that big solid Rover car was because he used to drive up from East London for every game David played. And he needed a car that could really cope with the heavy duty motorway things. Anyway, he talked. David did make it into the first team squad. And I remember, do you remember they had the class of 92 were fed in through European games. It didn't matter. It was on the way back from one of those. It might have been in Turkey. I can't remember where it was. And I told David, I said, excuse me, I must tell you a funny story. And I told him the story. And he laughed. He was very polite, you know. He probably thought, oh, God, is it? How boring. he was really polite. And he's always... I've seen him a few times, and he is one of the most polite people you could imagine. Anyway, that was... So I've always claimed that my claim to fame is that I discovered David Beckham.
Paddy Barclay there. Great story from Barclay and Barton, a post-war history of Manchester United. You can get that via lovesportradio.com. Just visit the website in the podcast section. It will be right there. It's also available on iTunes, Spotify, and a whole load of other platforms every Saturday night at 10 p.m. here on Love Sport. But Paddy Barclay laying claim to the fact that he not discovered David Beckham. Of course, he didn't discover David Beckham, but was one of the first people to see David Beckham. Incidentally, two things from that, Ben. One, he was wearing number eight, which of course he didn't go on to later wear. He wore 24, and then he wore 10, then he wore 7 when Eric Cantona left the club in 1997. He did wear number 8, however, in that Youth League Cup, in the FA Youth Cup final against Leeds, which United incidentally lost that season. The year after they'd won it, they then lost to Leeds United, but nothing really came of that Leeds United side. As we know, some great players from that team for Manchester United. But great story, and this buys into the Premier League Hall of Fame, because a whole load of players are going to eventually go into this, and whether it's commercialised or not, it doesn't really matter. For you, and I'll come to you in a minute, Jay, as well, if you could pick anyone, if anyone, and I imagine there's probably a few, who would you put into that Premier League Hall of Fame from Manchester United?
Yeah, I mean, David Beckham we mentioned there, and I love the fact that it's a skinny guy with floppy hair was the good, because Bex was synonymous with his hairstyles, but I always used to remember that Growing up, I wanted to be David Beckham, as every young kid did want to be playing football growing up. But I remember he used to wear his Adidas Predators, and he used to put the elastic for the tongue over the first and between the first and second stud. And I used to remember that Beckham was the only player that did that. Out of everyone, not Zidane, not anyone that wore the Predators, but he did that. So I made sure that when I went on the pitch, even though I was playing on a Saturday morning, I'd put it on between the first and second stud, and I'd try and emulate him. That didn't quite happen on the pitch, but you know, I just remember things like that make him so iconic. But a player that I'll throw in the hat that might not be the first name on everyone's lips when we talk about great Premier League strikers, but is Ruud van Nistelrooy, as a United player and as a Premier League great, because he's just a deadly striker. And we talk about Premier League strikers, and I'm sure that the Hall of Fame, that's who they'll lead with. They'll lead with Shearer, Henry, maybe even Wayne Rooney will get in there ahead of Ruud. But he was just a player that I always used to just go into Old Trafford and watching him. And when he scored, and everyone would chant, Ruud, 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 Ruud. Just hearing that echo around Old Trafford, and knowing the link up with David Beckham as well, that when Beckham got a cross in, you knew Van Nistelrooy was on the end of it. And he didn't score many goals outside the box, and he probably didn't score many goals that would make a highlight reel in today's age. You probably won't see a YouTube compilation of Ruud Van Nistelrooy's best goals and assists. like we do with a lot of players these days. But he was just a player that was everything you wanted from a striker. So I think I'd be pipping for him to go right in that Hall of Fame.
Nice. Jay, what are you saying on this? Because when you talk about a Premier League Hall of Fame, this is a Manchester United team who have won 13 titles, for crying out loud. The list is endless. You could, arguably, fill an entire starting 11 of Manchester United players in a Premier League Hall of Fame. For you, if you had to pick, who would you pick?
It's funny that, because one of the first players that sprung to my mind was Ruud van Nistelrooy. And he wouldn't be the obvious one, but I think that for most United fans who watched him, he was absolutely phenomenal. He just scored goals for fun. Was just a joy to watch, and he dragged us out of a few situations as well. Well, we weren't always flying under when Ruud was playing, but he always seemed to get goals. But I mean, it's really boring and obvious. But for me, you know, you mentioned 13 Premier League titles. One man won all of them, and that's Ryan Giggs. And I just can't see past that. I think if you're going to start off with someone, why not start off with someone who won more titles than anyone else and played more games than anyone else? So for me, it'd have to be Ryan Giggs. I think it'd be madness if he's not in there.
It's so subjective, this, isn't it? And this is partly why they've done it, right? It's gone crazy over social media since they announced that they were going to do this. And there are so many players that so many fans of so many clubs would have in there. And you're right, guys. I mean, in terms of the strikers, that's probably what they're going to focus on. What I hope they don't do is ignore the beginning stages, the early stages of the Premier League. You look at that inaugural campaign, 92-93. English football crying out for a mercurial talent to light up the Premier League, to light up English football and put it back on the map. Eric Cantona comes in, wins United their first title in 26 years. I just hope that that team, for example, and people always allude to that 94 team, that double winning side, as one of United's best. Yes, an element of romanticism in that, I think, but the great players from that side, Roy Keane, we haven't mentioned, Dennis Irwin. And that's where you think, do you know what, a Manchester United legend, but would he be regarded as a Premier League legend? We've spoken about David De Gea potentially being the best goalkeeper that Manchester United have ever had. Peter Schmeichel, arguably the best goalkeeper in Premier League history. So it's just a list that is, it's just endless, Ben.
Yeah, and you mentioned Dennis Irwin there, someone that you know that if he was to play in this day and age, he would be just as good a footballer, if not better, running up and down the wing, even though he was a full-back on both feet, and his set-piece delivery and everything. He had absolutely everything to his game, but will he get overlooked? And I'll just say, we're mentioning in the break there, the worry is that because it might be a fan-voted affair, that's where the danger creeps in. I remember Roma, the Italian club Roma, put out a thing at the end of last year with their team of the decade, and Chris Smalling very nearly got in their team of the decade, despite only being on loan for 6 months. So I think the worry is that if it goes out to Twitter, that's where all hell could break loose.
Yeah, didn't they have to change the goal of the season award on Match of the Day because Jack Wilshere seemed to win it every season because that Arsenal fans decided to vote on him as and when it happened. I think he scored on the final day of the season, didn't he? Gents, it's been nothing but a pleasure having you on, as always, on the Manchester United Fan Show. Before you go, Jay, a quick score prediction for the two games this week, away to Derby and at home to City.
I'll go away at Derby. I'll go with 3-1 to United, with Rooney getting a consolation goal for Derby. In the last minute and getting a round of applause off the United fans. And for the Derby, I'll go with, I can't see us keeping a clean sheet, but you know what, I'm going to go positive. I'm going to think it's going to be a bit of an end-to-end one. So I'm going to go with 3-2 to United. I'm going to go for a double win. I'll probably be wrong, but hopefully not.
Oh, a thriller from Jay there, Ben.
Do you know what? I'm going to keep the positivity and go for a double win. I think we'll get through Derby midweek. I'll go for a 2-0, so just a nice, just clean victory. No frills, but get the job done. And yeah, let's go for a 2-1 in the Derby next week and get that win that we need.
Nice. We owe Derby as well, don't we, for the Carabao Cup last season. This has been the Manchester United Fan Show. We'll be back next week, same time, 8 p.m. Love Sport on Sundays, with all the reaction from those games with Derby and City. We'll see you then.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.